Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, June 27, 2010. So anyway, I'm seeing a lot of excitement out there with our new receptor series, the professional series. People are really, really enjoying those. Give us a call at 1-800-729-2603 for more info. We got a lot of new stuff now, by the way. A lot of new things happening. We've also got some specials going on, some books that were slightly damaged. The Death of Ignorance, slightly damaged. The Rays of Truth, slightly damaged. And the Inside Track, slightly damaged. Much big discount. Anyway, we're going to start off with a great old UFO panel. Those are the most fun. I love UFO panels. Now let's see if Dr. Bell's group is here ready to go. I don't know how long it takes for him to...
There they are.
Sounds like Sean Morton.
Well, I think, Barry, we're talking about a consortium of families, probably 9 in number. There could be as many as 12. There's about 600 core power elite. They've got about 20,000 servants and sycophants and hangers-on and whatever. And we're talking about a core power structure of the...
That would be Sean Morton and the UFO
technology, which is what the franchise
sometimes is on our show.
And the shadow technology at the top, which is basically what I call a mother company, a parent company, that's set up smaller franchises like Jack in the Box or McDonald's, except they call them the United States and France and Germany and Russia, and that we're corporate franchises that belong to this mother company. And any technology that breaks through the box, in other words, any vertical technology that goes up and out, rather than bigger and better and smaller and faster, but all the same technology, I mean, there's been a foot that's been stepping on the face of humanity probably since World War II, not allowing us to progress past a certain obsolescent level. And this shadow government at the top is a group of bankers, financiers, royalty, wealthy families, literally the sons of God, you know, the mighty men of old, as they say, that has been consolidating their money and their wealth and their power, not just for 50 years, but for possibly 500 years, since the Crusades, no doubt. So this is who I'm talking about, these people at the top who have some sort of agenda for the planet of where they want to push it to. Somebody over here had a yes. Right. The question is, viruses, how are they being administered?
We usually through vaccines. Vaccines, for the example, polio.
Television.
Yeah, television. Yeah.
Too much party.
No, well, I'll just give you a couple quick examples. In Mobile, Alabama, 1960, a million people got inoculated with cancer through polio. San Francisco, 1978, 2,000 people got became an HIV virus. Zaire, Africa, 1976, July 7th, two people showed up in a missionary with bleeding diarrhea and bleeding mucus. Stayed there for 2 days. Nobody knew who they were. They weren't any of the 16 tribes that they normally service. By the end of October, those two people had disappeared. 1,000 people lay dead, including half the people in the mission. So that was the great one that's coming now. It's already in Texas. So it just goes on and on.
Yeah. We just got a report from Oakville, Washington. It's about 50 miles from Yelm toward the coast. I think Grays Harbor County. And it was on Channel 7 News night before last. I don't know, maybe some of you saw it, but unmarked black helicopter dropped pellets that turned into a gel-like substance. Two elderly people got deathly sick, and quite a few more are ill from some sort of virus. It was analyzed supposedly with, from human bacteria. That was the report that came on the TV, and we're checking that out. MUFON has some people. Some of our field investigators are checking that out. So that's Oakville, Washington, 2 days ago.
One of the things that we do at Paradigm, my company, with Pleiadians, teaching us all this stuff, is we make all kinds of products that build your immune system. My whole thrust of my workshop today is how to build your immune system, because your immune system is your consciousness. And if they can attack your consciousness through your immune system, you're going to be lay there trying to survive. You won't be able to think and act clearly. And that's the whole auspice of what we're about now.
Here's also where some of it links into the UFO technology. The interesting thing about the AIDS virus is that when the AIDS virus was actually developed at the Biological Warfare Unit at Fort Detrick, specifically what they were using was cattle blood, bovine visna virus, and sheep's brains, which is a sheep viscous virus. Now, both of these things were, during the cattle mutilations, specifically what they were taking was they were coring out the rectums of these cows and tongues and eyes, but also taking sheep's brains as well, along with the blood. And this stuff was then being crossbred in a laboratory with green monkey T cells, because in the early 1970s, most of the research into cancer was being done with green monkey T cells. This was crossbred with green monkey T cells and then trained in a laboratory to attack human tissue, then laced into a polio virus, then basically shot into most of the population of Africa. The only reason they spread it in the homosexual population here in the United States was because they took out ads in the gay magazines, The Advocate, The Village Voice, et cetera, in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York City, basically saying that they would only administer a hepatitis B vaccine to young promiscuous homosexuals between the ages of 18 and 30. Homosexuals in monogamous relationships were not taken, by the way. And they paid you $100 to give you this experimental vaccine. And the reason for this was because, and this is nothing against their lifestyle, but they were having sex with 30, 40 different guys a night in the bathhouses in New York. And when the New York State health authorities tried to close the bathhouses down, the federal government sent federal marshals in to specifically keep those bathhouses open, because the gays were ranting and raving about the fact that their civil rights are being violated. And New York State health authorities were going, look, people are dying here. We don't know what to do. We've got complaints of dying, of people dying from this weird disease. We have to shut these places down. So now we've got a disease that's not only a disease, but it has civil rights, along with actually having, along with being a danger. So
it's also been genetically designed. These diseases are developed in stages, and in the AIDS started with a frequency of higher ultraviolet, which depletes immune systems if your electrolytes in your brain aren't high enough. And so this was introduced in college because of promiscuous sex, and then it was pulled out and then mixed. And so they do genetic inbreeding by, you know, doing serums and mixing in that in the laboratory. But the AIDS hasn't reached its final development. It's just now reaching it. Its final development is transmission, because it's designed to be airborne through mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are the target of they call them the flying needles. So you haven't seen AIDS yet in its glory. It's just getting ready to be launched.
And I think to take this one step further to the metaphysical aspect, and this has a lot to do with what I think all of us are doing, the bottom line is that they are trying to attack the DNA helix. And by attacking the DNA helix, they will do it through cellular phones, through radar, through microwaves, through the fact that the entire planet is miswired. The whole planet is wired at 60 cycles. And the actual Schumann resonance of the planet actually jumped almost a full point on June 22nd. The Schumann resonance used to be 7.83 to 8.1, and it literally jumped a point on June 22nd to 9.1, which is one of the reasons why you're having these massive power blackouts and transformers are exploding, causing the latest rounds of fires in Southern California. The reason they want to attack the DNA helix is because the DNA helix is an antenna, and this antenna is actually receiving information. And the information that's coming in, we're being bombarded with more information because the Earth is moving into an entirely new area of space, literally what you would call the Age of Aquarius. And we are being opened up to all this information, and they feel that if they can bombard the DNA helix, that the antenna of the cellular knowledge and the cellular structure will keep mankind from jumping to that next level, keep mankind from literally evolving one step further.
Could you mention the heart project?
Actually, hang on. Let me get a guy who hasn't asked a question here. Yes, sir. Oh, okay, about the heart project.
Could you mention the heart project in relation to all this?
Madeline, do you know about the heart project? Related. Do you want to make a comment on that?
Well, we've just been just watching what's been going on with all the reports on the heart project. But there was something on TV one time that I saw about 2 months ago that had a very interesting connection to the heart project. Whether it was really connected or not, I don't know, but it showed this superconductor gun that the Nazis were supposed to have developed way back at the end of World War II, and that was supposed to have been the original plans for the heart project that later spread all over, the whole thing with them trying to control the weather and having effect with sound frequency and having this grid up. Of course, the idea is that they're having some kind of a grid that people won't be able to get through with rockets and missiles and that sort of thing. But if you really follow it, it has pretty far-reaching implications as far as the other aspects as well. And there have been rumors in the UFO world that say, they're putting this up to make some of the UFOs come down, crash, that type of thing.
Fred, I know you've got a lot of it. Hang on, Fred has a lot of information on heart.
Well, yeah, I worked, I don't want to admit this, but I worked on some of the technologies back in the 70s and 60s that became the Heart Project. First of all, over at Los Alamos, we developed a beam, and we used a 1 gigawatt laser and this was back, this was finally put to, it was written about a little bit by the government in 1979, putting a 1 gigawatt laser in place with an invisible beam, you know, higher than the eye can see, created a heat zone up in the outer atmosphere equivalent to the heat of a hydrogen bomb. The thing is, it was the radioactivity is a very short wavelength, so it wouldn't cause radioactive poisoning to the people of Earth. But what it did is it created this heat. We were able to sustain this heat. So imagine a hydrogen bomb going off for several hours at a time. Now, you know what that does to your trade winds? It makes all your winds blow differently. So in the early 80s, your weather started changing. Okay. The reason this research was going on was because we wanted to fire microwaves into this heat beam to deflect microwaves. You know, one of the big dangers why we, for example, have been in the pyramids for so many years is because people, the radar that's at the airport, one day there's a temperature inversion, and the radar's not on the planes looking for planes. It ends up hitting you in your bed when you sleep at night, causing that jumping sensation. It's very dangerous, but they don't tell you that. So that was the beginning of the technology. Where the technology is now, we have 1.5 trillion watt transmitters in Arecibo, Puerto Rico, and Russia, and in here. And the Russians are part of a triune. So it's not about this, and it's called a full global shield. And if the Russians are involved in this, and they're very much involved because they're part of a three-cornered, you know, pyramid stretch around the Earth, you know, the auspices that they feed the public is, well, we're going to heat up the ionosphere, which is normally minus 250 degrees. We're going to heat it up to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty damn hot up there. Then we're going to shoot a microwave beam into it, a very high, and we're going to X-ray for a hidden, like in Iraq, you know, we're going to look for a mile under the ground, see if Saddam Hussein has got a laboratory making atomic weapons. That's the auspices. But, and the Air Force says, if you're in that area when this is going on and you have a car and you have flares in the trunk, the environmental impact report says the flares are going to go off. So it's that much. So, but it is a full global shield. And what happens is these grays are coming back now from different places where they've been, and their ships and the propulsion system and the grays use a lot of beryllium. So when they hit this full global shield, when it's enacted, the ships blow up and you see these green flashes that go across the sky, you know, three or four states across.
They just had over Los Angeles just recently.
Yeah, that was one return. So we're actually under some kind of an invasion right now. And the government is getting very nervous because a lot of federal officials could go to prison rather quickly if the cover-up comes to light. So we're accelerating the Mars rock now. It's pretty soon going to be a Mars fossil. I mean, you can see all this in the media. They're stepping the tune up. So these are some of the kinds of things that are going on with the HAARP project. I could go on for hours, but it just gives you an idea.
Do you think they're using HAARP against our immune system as well?
Totally. Yeah. They don't care about your immune system. That's your consciousness.
For those of you who aren't familiar with it, HAARP stands for High Altitude Oral Resonance Projection. And what it is it's a device in Alaska that is being used to heat pockets of the ionosphere. What the party line is, they supposedly heat up these pockets in the ionosphere, and then they can bounce different things off. They basically create a lens, and they try to bounce things off the lens. And they can either bounce certain types of radar, which means they can look several hundred feet underground for gold deposits or radar deposits or nuclear missiles, but they can also bounce microwaves off it as a weapon. They can cook an entire city like microwave popcorn if they wanted to. And of course the problem is that they are heating up these chunks of the ionosphere, which is changing the weather patterns. Last year, as I'm sure you remember, the very, very severe winter that we had here in, you had here in Washington and also in California, the weathermen were scratching their heads saying, we don't know what it is, but this wind, the usual jet stream that goes over the central part of the United States and Canada, is almost like it's being grabbed and hooked straight down through Washington, through California, through Oregon. When they were asked, when they invented the HAARP project, well, aren't you worried that heating up these pockets of the atmosphere is going to goof up the weather systems of the planet? These scientists just sort of went, well, I guess we'll find out, won't we? So it's sort of like building a nuclear reactor and not being able to turn it off and saying, well, what's going to happen when we have to turn the nuclear reactor off in 20 years? Well, I guess we'll find out 20 years from now. But somebody hasn't asked a question. This gentleman way in the back here. Yes. Hang on. You haven't asked a question? Go ahead. Oh, you got a HAARP thing. Okay, all right.
I got a planetary red alert on HAARP, and it does change the whole immune system, and it's important. The question that I had, though, was when I was down in Sedona and I saw them weaving a grid up in the sky, mm-hmm. is that connected to the work they're doing there? Because I know the humming accompanies everything.
Well, the humming is I have a theory on the Taos hum. I think that what's happened is with the Taos hum is I think that there's sonic drillers. And I think that what's happening is that they, instead of using the old MOHOs, which is what the RAND Corporation invented in the 50s, that they're actually using sound to drill these gigantic holes between the various tunnels. And they've actually found a new way of drilling, and this isn't even classified, but it's like a RAND DECA report where they can move right into a mountain and use sonics to actually just melt solid rock. And that they're actually using these sonic drillers back and forth. But as far as a grid being drawn in the sky, no, it actually creates an energy which creates a pocket or a lens, and they can actually create that pocket or lens within about a 180-degree, well, not even that much, about a 90-degree radius around where it actually is.
Well, the danger is you heat up one part of the planet, the other part's going to get real cold.
Yeah, exactly.
And
well,
then you get the extreme.
It's insanity. It's pure insanity. Yeah. And what the ultimate, you know, whether or not they're just stupid or whether or not they're actually, just scientists are doing this just out of the blue. The gentleman hasn't asked a question back there. He's been very quiet. Yes, sir. I've been involved in what? You have to speak up because I can't hear you.
I've been involved with this research for quite a long time.
Okay.
One of the biggest challenges I see in society is that the average person is really stupid and contaminated.
Yes. He said that, I'll repeat the question anyway, he says that he's been involved in the research for a long time and the average person is very much spiritually contaminated. Go ahead.
Yeah, Palladians call that auric stench.
Yeah, go ahead.
I believe that everything in the universe is energy, including human thought.
Yes. And everything in the universe is energy, including human thought. Yes.
Certain beings evolved in parts of the galaxy, they evolved basically from negative energy, such as the grays.
Yes.
And I believe the grays can exist here. At the spiritual consciousness of man would rise to a higher level and the energy would rise to a positive level, the grace would exist in that energy.
Very good. He's saying that basically just as you have positive thoughts in the universe, you also have negative areas in the universe as well, and that various these beings, specifically the grays, evolved in these negative thought form areas in the universe, and that if we raise the vibratory frequency of the planet high enough, that none of these beings will be able to actually exist here or come here anymore. Very good. Excellent observation. Down in the back. Yes, sir.
What's the reason why there is a secret government and so on? If it was just for money and they have the ability to transport people off Earth, well, they just do the same thing on other planets, they want them. Or some sort of discipline for them.
Okay, the question is, why is there some sort of secret government? Because if they have the money to transport people off the Earth, I didn't understand the last part of the question.
So they have that sort of technology.
Yes.
Why don't they go to other planets and make more money?
Go to other planets and make more money. Good question. Anybody want to jump in here, Jerry?
Grab
the mic anytime. I feel like I'm you're not being ignored. Bottom line, I'm not them. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can tell you certain things. I theorize. I call them the scum power elite, that they're basically the scum that sits on the top of the pond that keeps the light away from the rest of us. I think that too much of it would have to do with losing power and losing control in the short term. Maybe in the long term, yes, that we could do that.
There is another reason, too.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
There's this guy called Jesus Christ that comes here every once in a while. We have the spiritual being that appears every so many millenniums. And that phenomenon, like you don't have a Christ figure appearing on planets like in Era and Taigata and places like that. It doesn't happen that often. So there is a base interest in deep religion and deep spiritual belief that's very much a part of the whole spiritual constitution of these powerful families that control this earth and have for several millenniums.
I don't know if we have an answer to your question as to why they... I don't know. You know, it sounds to me like, well, if they're interested in using the entire population of Earth as for slave labor, why are they interested in killing us off? I mean, it seems to me like if you're the farmer in the house, the only time you get the guns and the dogs out is when the cows and the pigs get out of the barn. And of course, once the cows get put back in the barn, the cows are so stupid they blame the dog. They say, oh, it's the dog's fault, we're back here in the house. There you go. I mean, I did have, Adam Trumbly, who has 7 degrees and worked with Buckminster Fuller and was a very high-level government official. I asked him, are extraterrestrials working with the government? And he said, young man, the question you should be asking is not whether or not extraterrestrials are working with the government, whether or not extraterrestrials are the government. And he said, think about it. Look back in your history. Look back at the sons of God. Look back at, the American Indians have an interesting thing to say about this, if I can comment on it just a second. They talk about what they call the people of the blue light and the people of the red light. They said that the blue light beings, primarily us, the Caucasoid races, the Pleiadians, wherever they go, the people of the blue light is cold. It needs worship. It needs to absorb energy and information. And wherever those beings go, they set up oligarchical, fascist, monarchical systems where they basically set up a plantation where they're living in the house and we're out, you know, sort of picking cotton in the fields. And in essence, when they leave to go someplace else, they leave one of their kids in charge, which we call the God-King system, which is, you know, the first time ever that the United States actually broke out of the God-King system, that God owns the world as a plantation and that we are servants to that God. The Indians sort of joke with us and say, well, we know where you white people are going when you die. You're going to go be servants of the house of the Lord. It sounds like, you know, you're going to go shine somebody's shoes up in some, you know, up in some spacecraft up in space. And then they talk about the people of the red light. Some of the video that I have on this is of these red light craft that is being photographed by Carlos Diaz down in Mexico. The red light beings are many of the indigenous peoples. The Aborigines in Australia, the many of the blacks in Africa, the red races on the planet, even some of the indigo races that predate them. And they deal in tribal structures, not, you know, I guess what we would call patriarchal, matriarchal structures, but in much more broad-based tribal structures, because from the red light comes heat, comes warmth, comes energy, comes passion, comes love, and it's much more feminine in its acceptance. So there are different types of beings that are visiting the planet. I'm just saying that the blue light beings, mostly rogue Pleiadians and Lyrans and what have you, are setting up these sort of dictatorial systems that we're just now in the process of getting rid of. Somebody hasn't asked a question yet. Lady in the back, yes? A vertical what man light? Right. And this was where? Right. Well, remember, I mean, the term flying saucer was coined right here in Seattle. I mean, when Kenneth Arnold saw the ships over Mount Rainier. So, I mean, literally, this is sort of the beginning of the flying saucer phenomenon, the beginning of the flying saucer generation right here in Seattle. Yes?
I'd like to make one little comment about this person's question of why is there a secret government? Kings ruled by the sword, and that's how they ruled. It was messy and it worked. And modern kings, they are rulers, can't do that anymore. It's politically uncool. And so the modern power of rule is information.
Right.
Knowledge is power, and the lack of knowledge is a lack of power.
Right.
You can have a secret society and deny us their knowledge about a particular thing.
It's always the choke points of food, energy, and information. That's what they've controlled for thousands of years. It's what they use to keep the population. It's what the farmer uses to keep the cows in the barn, in essence. This gentleman here, because you haven't asked a question yet. Yes.
Kind of a question, comment. We've seen we've reached sort of a critical mass, and it's probably going beyond that in terms of media and public awareness of this phenomenon. And I know that this. There seems to have been kind of an evolution over the years in the way that this has been presented publicly. And I'm wondering, first of all, I have a real problem with the whole concept of the sort of dichotomy between good guys and bad guys, well, it's gray, it's pretty bad guys. There's lots of shades of gray. And what I'm wondering is, to what extent is the government involved in a disinformation campaign, and what is the nature of that disinformation campaign? We want you to think that they're all real bad guys, or what's going on?
Well, I'll answer first and just pass it down. You're getting the essence of the party line, and of course the party line is basically the Roswell case, that, you know, these little boogies crashed and that we picked up a bunch of them, they were alive and we were absorbing their technology, and everything sort of started about 1947 or so, and then the military's in control, and they're forming these secret societies like MJ-12 in order to handle the extraterrestrial threat, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's the party line. The truth might be, once again, that not only are extraterrestrials, have they been coming here for the last 50 years, but they've been coming here for tens of thousands of years, and that they are, in fact, indigenous to, and I'm not just talking about extraterrestrials, I'm also talking about ultra-terrestrials. In other words, beings from other dimensions sliding back and forth through this planet. So that, you know, the real point would be is that they've been in control all along, and the real propaganda campaign is giving us some sort of attitude that that we're in control, that the military knows what's going on, that the military knows what's happening, and that eventually they'll protect us from whatever's out there. And but I also think too that the reason they're putting the spin on the information that they are, and the reason they're trying to release as much of it as they are, is because I firmly believe that within the next year or so you're going to see ships appearing over New York City, Los Angeles, Seattle, exactly like they're appearing over Mexico. And over Mexico, what are they going to explain to the population? I mean, in Mexico, they had two motherships park themselves for almost a solid week, witnessed by 27 million people all over South American television, you know, South America, Central America. You didn't hear word one about it up here in El Norte. I mean, the Iron Curtain just dropped on the, you know, on the information. So, you know, what happens when these ships start hovering over our gringo cities, and then we have to suddenly, you know, deal with a mothership floating over New York or what have you? I mean, these guys have got to have an answer, and I think that they're desperately dancing as fast as they can to come up with some kind of spin on the information, because you have to sympathize with them. What's the point of government? To govern, to be in control, in essence. And if you basically tell them that, well, okay, there's beings out there that can roll over in their sleep tomorrow and wipe us out, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it, you know, what are you supposed to say? And, you know, when it's funny, because if they actually say, well, there's no such thing as UFOs, they're right, but they might all be identified. You ever thought of that? So, we know exactly what everything is. There's no such thing as UFOs. We know what everything is. Because they already know. So they're trying to control the spin on the information. And if you look at the biblical texts or any of this ancient stuff, it seems like over and over and over again, these sky people basically come here, set up some sort of civilization, enslave the indigenous populations, and exactly like the British did to the Indians, or the Spanish did to the Incans, or whatever. I mean, there's a whole other take to this as well, but if these guys were to land, we should kill them and eat them, and show them exactly that we're totally savage, and that they should stay the hell off our planet, because every single time a higher technology has come in contact with a lower technology, the lower technology is raped and enslaved. You know, ask Chief Seattle, what happened here?
Yeah, if you look at Sitchin's books, a lot of you are familiar with that, where if you've studied ancient legends, that's what Sean said is true. Start out with the gods being so friendly and giving people all the technology, and then the people start rebelling, right. And then there's the wars between gods and men. And
first god, then gun.
That's right. And so it goes on, and it's the same cycle. We're getting the same information, and most of my research has been with the ancient technologies, and that's the same exact message that I'm getting, and it's been here. It just recycles every so many years, and so it's pretty much the same old thing that we have in the ancient writings of all the ancient people all over the world. And how many times did it happen before that? You know, if you go by the Mayan prophecies and the information that the Mayans had, of course, they were talking about going back 30 billion years into the past, and they had their legends going way back to similar type cycles, and they claimed that we're in the sixth root race now.
Do you gentlemen have comments on
this? Go ahead.
I would like to. This is what I would like to say. You've all been sitting here for about an hour and a half, listening to all the technology that is enslaving us, all the ideas behind where they came from to enslave us and why and how they're doing that. This is you they're talking about. This is me that these fellas are bringing information. What's happening to us right now? It's not a science fiction story on television. And anybody who can sit here and listen to all of this and expect that the government or your church is going to show you the way and protect you, and you go running there in the basement in a year when the craft is hovering over Puget Sound because you don't know how the hell to deal with that now. Do I go to work? Or what? Okay. Now, let me finish here for a second, because this is really what it's about. Are you in charge, or are they in charge? Now, anybody in the New Age movement has to understand that there's a basic theory that you've lived before, and that you know all of this stuff. And you know how to deal with it, and in fact, the reason that you are here is to raise the level of the vibration on this planet and the consciousness to get rid of all this shit. I don't want to leave it there.
That's shifts, ladies and gentlemen.
Shifts. Thank you, guys, sir. All right, now please let me finish. Okay. I haven't said anything for suspend building up here.
I knew you'd explode.
It's not that I have an answer for you. But the real question isn't who has the gosh darn craft that's shaped like a triangle, or where they're parked, or how many of them are there, or what technology is making them hover over the ground. The answer is, what are you personally going to do about it within your life? You have in your DNA, don't let them zap that. You can just meditate. You can just tone. You can just create reality with the words and the thoughts that do not participate in the crap that you see on television. And the reaction that you have when you hear all of this, it just seems, oh my God, I just want to go and climb into a cave because all the vibrations and all the atmosphere is heating up and all the AIDS viruses are around. If you concentrate.
Just check and see if there's some more on the other side, because the UFO panel is still going on. So we will eject this puppy and we'll move it over. It's a good panel. Sean Morton's a great host. Had a lot of fun with him doing a lot of the panels and stuff. Should pick right back up, hopefully. And we'll just continue on from where we were. Okay, guys, where's the panel? Hello. Some of these taping people, they didn't do a very good job, and they'd go to a second tape rather than use the backside. And I think that's what happened on this one. Oh, well, let me stop it and run it forward a little bit. See if we can't find a little bit more.
You folks all know probably the person you're sitting next to. If you look in their eyes, you'll recognize them. And that's why you're here today, if I may make a strong statement that is a belief of mine. You are here to find support for yourselves and affirmation for what you feel and to vibrate with a vibration, a frequency that gets rid of this fear and invites this overwhelming disempowerment that's coming through your DNA being destroyed and all the other technologies we've heard. I started out with my little speech here in the beginning about there are other technologies coming down from extraterrestrials. And Sean has mentioned them 100 times. I know Marilyn knows them all. But it's really what you can be here for today. To remember that everything is within you. And there's radiation, there's power, there's frequencies that are very benevolent, acknowledging, and powerful. Just stuff that if you take it and you understand it, you change in an instant, and you're not afraid of any of this crap, and you don't have to spend your life wondering whose flying saucer is that, because that isn't the point. The point is the Earth is changing. You all have heard a million times it's going from third to fourth to fifth. Sean says it's going, you know, we're moving into the age of Aquarius. We're going to be a different part in space. You've all heard all of this. So let's just say for an exercise that it's true. If that's true, what are you doing personally in your everyday life to make you stronger and deal with that and survive through so you can help the planet and the human race, not let anybody do you in? That's what I have to say.
Enough said. That wraps it up. Thank you so much.
And I'll be giving a workshop at 4 o'clock, and we'll be giving.
Announce your workshops too. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Nice workshops at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, it's going to be on DNA and how you can arm yourself to do what he just explained on a biochemical and physical level. That's at 4 o'clock, and then I'll be going to LA at 6. So I only have 2 hours more with you.
We got videos. You want to?
That was a great little panel there. It was fun. So anyway, now we will. Do something else. We got a little bit of time to spare here today. How about that? So now what we're going to do is we're going to put on a radio show from a radio show. How's that sound? Woohoo. This is a 30-minute radio show, and you'll enjoy this. Da-dun, da-dun, da-dun. Away we go. Ho-ho.
We're
morning to you, Southern California. You are.
Yeah, we're getting ready to rock and roll on that.
93.5 KFOY.
Yes, we're going to do a radio show.
Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Now live from Laguna Beach, California, here is Dr. Fred Bell. Dr. Bell, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Now, what is all this I hear about a crash?
Well, I crashed my flying saucer on the freeway this morning on the way back from Venus last night. I had a late date.
Well, that's what happens when you go out of town with those things.
Well, I had some of that Venusian milkshake, you know, and it absolutely got me real crazy on the control stick.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Well, I know that, but according to Kimberly, I mean, I'm looking out, beautiful Laguna Beach is all cloudy, you know?
Yeah.
She made it cloudy here. She talked about her chariot all morning here.
Well, she had a very upsetting experience that I can identify with.
Well, I've had a few of those, you know. It's really rough when I get on my motorcycle and have the same experience, you know?
Yes. Did you get a chance to hear Frederick, by the way, this morning?
No, I didn't get a chance to hear him earlier enough. Could you reiterate?
Well, I can't because I'm not Frederick. All I can tell you is that Frederick is one of the most articulate, overwhelming personalities I have ever met. He is very well versed in the Vedas.
Uh-huh.
He is steeped in Hindu philosophy.
Right.
And he claims to be from Arcturus. And that is about all I'm going to comment on in Frederick. We're going to have him back, and he stimulated a lot of calls and was very, very fascinating.
Sounds like you guys had a lot of fun this morning.
Oh, I had a lot of fun. I was just sorry to hear about Kimberly. That was terrible, and I'm sure she'll rebound from that, though.
Yeah, well, if I'd had my act together, I wouldn't have got back from Venus so late last night.
Were you taking some psychedelics or something?
No, I would like to, though. No, actually, the best I could do is a glass of wine late at night. You know, I gave up psychedelics a while back because the problem was, I found that I don't come down from those things, I take them and I just go out, forever. As a matter of fact, I have to eat a lot of meat these days to even stay down because I get the same effect from eating, vegetables and raw foods that most people do from psychedelics.
Now that is fascinating.
It's true, Well, yesterday we were talking about the system, we started getting into how to align it and what it does, but
yes.
Having been in one for 14 years, I'll tell you, Jim, back in the early, early, early 70s and late 60s, yes, I did take a few psychedelics, like every day, for about a year, after I sold my electronics company because I was like running away from everything. Today, my attitude is accept everything, but in those days, I didn't know any better.
Yes, well, you're one these days that preaches purity of body and mind.
Yeah. But, what was interesting is what I strived back in those days when I would come down from psilocybin was my big thing in those days, but when I would come down from the experience, I would ground out for a couple of days. I was a strict vegetarian then, and I'd go back up again. I just couldn't be on this plane. I couldn't be bothered with the mundane things that happened on the Earth-type plane. Today, realize this is after the time machine, right, which we talked about in previous shows. After the time machine, which showed me that everything is happening now, right now, like the most dearly thing that I could be doing right now is talking to you, For you and I to exchange energy is the best thing that could ever happen at this point in time because that's what we're supposed to be doing. And our interchange is shared by lots and lots and lots of listeners. That, to make that statement 10 years ago, I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, all right, Jim, all right, you believe what you believe in. I believe what I believe in. I'll see you later, But today, it's like, you learn about, I've learned about seasoning, about spice, because, the future is right now. We can take off any time we want. Now, the more grounded out that you become through whatever means that you use to become grounded out, when you do lift off, because you're grounded out, you lift off entire segments of society with you, which is natural. You know what I mean? And it's our job, it's your job, and it's my job to have these kinds of communiques that we have on the phone here and on the air with all of our listeners, because we are raising consciousness at the moment that we share new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage every listener out there to share new ideas, whether they be good or whether they be bad, whether you're insecure about them or whether you're confident about them, share them with your friends, because sharing is just so important, you know. Sound like Kimberly Hart now, don't I?
Well, I was thinking, what I agree with what you say. I think that we should constantly hypothesize new ideas, and then we should try and validate them with evidence from the real world.
Yeah, no, I totally realize that and totally agree with you 100%, you know. But anyway, you know, back in the 60s when I was doing all this crazy stuff in the early 70s, to get high, at some point in time I realized the idea is not to get high, it's to be high, you know, all the time. So today, I have to go out and find myself at least twice a week eating some meat, you know, which I wouldn't have done back in the early 70s, late 60s when I was a strict vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was absolutely revolting to think about, you know, killing an animal to sustain my own life, you know. Realize that when you harvest the plant, you're doing the same thing on a more, you know, lesser level. But the fact is, what you have to do is give thanks, you know. You have to revere what is being put into your stomach. You know, that's like saying a prayer over each meal, which I've learned to do.
So, you know, I let me just stop you there for 1 second, because I think you made a very important point when you were talking about the essence of life in both the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom. If you are a vegetarian, and again, I'm throwing this out as an opinion, it would seem to me that what you are doing is giving the animal kingdom preference over the, or you're showing more reverence towards the animal kingdom, because you won't kill them, but you're perfectly willing to eat the vegetable kingdom, the plant kingdom.
That's totally true. And what it boils down to is good old karma, you know.
Uh-huh.
When you eat a vegetable, you take on a certain karma that in a period of time makes you very yinned out. When you get into the animal, it's, you know, called the yang energy. But the fact is, you need to balance the two. Someday, we'll reach a point where we become breatharians, and we'll only breathe the oxygen, you know, of the earth and the nitrogen of the earth, and transmute the energy. Meanwhile, the animal is giving a willing sacrifice to him. And, you know, you can go out and make headlines all over the world, or I could go out and make headlines all over the world about how inhumane it is to kill an animal for us to live. But the fact is, if either one of us did that, it would have no effect on society for more than a few milliseconds.
Right. As a matter of fact, right now, it's interesting you bring that up, because there's a lot of controversy over the little baby that had the baboon's heart implanted.
Yeah, that's real interesting, you know, that kind of heart transplant.
But some people don't believe that it was right to kill the young baboon so that the young baby could live.
Well, you know, it's like about 3 or 4 days ago, you guys had reached a really intimate conversation when you were talking about ultrasound and observing an abortion and how the young fetus was reacting to the tongs of the doctor that was going in there, and how after he had seen that on the ultrasound, he never did an abortion again. And at that point in time, I remember that you and the doctor that you were talking to had made the comment, at what point does a soul enter onto the scene? You know, that was one of the questions that I asked one of my Tibetan teachers a long time ago.
And the answer?
Well, the answer was very simple. The soul overshadows the mother and the father long before the child is, you know, inseminated or is beginning. The soul is like remember we talked about the bee and the beehive and the angel?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, the soul overshadows, you know, the mother and the father. I don't really know where it begins, but it's somewhere at the point in the relationship when they're like heavy dating or any kind of seriousness or commitments are made. That much I learned from the Tibetans, that the overshadowing begins there. And as the mother, once the mother gets pregnant, the soul, the sphere of influence, which is called a ring pass knot by the Tibetans, as the fetus becomes more and more, you know, alive and more larger and large in the woman's stomach, it's the soul level on the physical plane becomes less and less and less, the sphere of influence. For example, the opposite of that one would be a person that died, say, on the operating table. My grandfather was the first case in New York to do that. And then And then 6 hours later, he woke up in the Buffalo morgue, you know. He was pronounced dead, but he wakes up in the morgue in a refrigerated section, wide awake, you know, and alive. He had had this experience of all around his periphery and an experience of his wife that had died of cancer 10 years before that, my grandmother. Well, imagine the reverse of that. And it's common sense if you think about it. The soul that overshadows the mother and the father becomes less and less the sphere of influence, which is called a ring pass now, becomes less and less and less as the fetus reaches maturation towards expression on the physical plane. So the soul, which is presiding over the mother and father, loses its power and slowly surrenders to the birth state, the state of birth. Because at that point, it's the same thing as my grandfather went through, or lots of people went through, where they wake up and they're on the physical plane. And it's common sense, if you think about it, it's not that complicated. Example, why does a soul surrender, you know, itself and surround itself to a mother and father? Look at the castles in Europe, okay? Most of the German castles, especially up in the Carpathian Mountains in Hungary and in Yugoslavia, the castles that are there are very, very, very large structures, not built in one lifetime, built in many, many, many lifetimes, because the master soul would continually reincarnate again and again and again into the family structure. And this is what the desire was of that family, because the most powerful unit of energy, and we've said it many times on this show, energy cannot be created, energy cannot be destroyed, but the most powerful unit of energy, and think about it, is the family unit. What is more awesome than the power of a family? What, you know, if God is for real and we have our freedom, what can extend beyond the family unit? We have our brothers and our sisters and our mothers and fathers, and this feeling goes on and on and on again, and it grows. So applying that knowledge, which is what the Tibetans teach us about, which is what I was talking about yesterday in the synthesizing of the Eastern and the Western philosophies, it's not so hard to see how that works. You know, it works in Europe. Europe is a very strong culture. When scientists, for example, want to look at negative ionization, we look at cultures. We look at the effects, for example, of the full moon and the new moon on civilization. We looked at the Shirav, the Hamsun, you know, all the different names that have been given to the witches' winds over centuries. And we look at the reactions of people. Like, for example, in Turkey, there are laws that are 1,000 years old saying that if crimes are committed, you know, during the full moon, or during the Shirav over there, there's a certain leniency given on the court to the person, the offender, you know, because of this condition which produces high serotonin levels. So we look at cultures that have shown us a lot. In America, you know, America is a very dear country to me, being an American. But unfortunately, what we lack in this country is culture. We really lack reflection on our ancestry. And we should respect that, because if our ancestors didn't exist, we wouldn't exist. And so when you get into the philosophies of abortion and that, what you're doing when you take that place, first of all, when you do an abortion, you are removing that oversoul, that overshadowing energy, back to the cosmos. You're not getting rid of it. It will sit there and wait for another opportunity, and it will come again and again, until it is finally allowed to express itself. But you're also saying that, you know, you're not accepting responsibility of the parenthood that brought you into this world. Like, you know, like Jim, I'm sure somebody changed your diapers, right, when you were a kid?
No, I was very prolific as a... Of course.
Yeah, right, me too.
I don't remember it, though.
Yeah, well, you should. I mean, you were a mess. I remember it. But anyway, all kidding aside, you know, karma, the art of sacrifice, right? You know, it's like I have a daughter that's 5, and I didn't have any problem changing her diapers when she made a mess out of them. I had no problem because I was doing for her what my parents did for me. You know, if anything, I was getting rid of this karmic obligation that I had, because when somebody serves you, you learn in the art of service to relinquish that energy. Now, of course, being a scientist, I had shortcuts. You know, I never changed diapers, you know, like the average person does. If she did the big number two in the diapers, I put her in the sink and turned the water on at a nice level where it was comfortable and flushed it all down the garbage disposal. I mean, there's scientific methods that you can use here. The fact is, I honored that responsibility. You know?
It sounds very assembly-like.
Yeah, it was that way. But anyway, what we were talking about yesterday was setting up the systems in the house. Remember that? And I think I better get back to the subject here before I get rid of the whole program.
That's okay. I enjoyed just listening to you.
Do you?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, listen to me. Listen to you a little bit, you know. I enjoyed the chariot conversations earlier today, and I just had to get into that feeling, you know, because obviously Kimberly wanted us to, you know. She created a whole thing for the rest of the day, which is okay. I accept that, because maybe I'll do that tomorrow. You know?
No, now you can choose to react to that situation any way you want to.
Yeah, I know. You know, as we talk, it gets darker and darker down here. Maybe we're going to have an earthquake in a few minutes.
Is there a large dark cloud moving over a Laguna now? Or
yeah. As a matter of fact,
the mothership.
Starting
right?
About 10:30, you know, it actually got crazy. I was expecting the rain any minute down here, you know.
I want to stop for just a second and remind everyone they are listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. On this Tuesday morning, we do this Monday through Friday between 11 o'clock and 11:30 on your talk alternative. Dr. Bell, now, are you sure there is not a mothership in that cloud?
Well, I'll tell you, if another month or so, I wouldn't argue with that, you know. And it won't be too long before we see a few of those around here, like I think the one that our beloved friend the other day saw, you know, the one back east.
Which one are we talking about?
Alan Hynek.
Oh, Dr. Hynek's report of the flap back in upstate New York and Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yes,
you know, it was funny. That's where he had, you know, he was like I remember when he was contracted by the Air Force, because I was in the Air Force. And it was amazing because he was the number one skeptic. I mean, that guy could explain away a sighting in the swamp gas. And me, being from Ann Arbor, Michigan, had seen lots of swamp gas. And I'd also seen lots of big, huge, you know, radio telescope set in the swamps, which would be a feature attraction for a UFO.
Well, you know, Dr. Hynek never really said that UFOs were swamp gas.
No. He did in the very beginning. In the very beginning, he did. And then he had an experience at Marymount College back east in Connecticut, where he went in to investigate a UFO sighting. And, you know, while he was investigating it, they had one, and he was a witness. That turned him around.
What I've got to say, in fairness to Dr. Hynek, what he has said to me when I've asked him about that,
mm-hmm.
he claims that there was a press conference being held, and, of course, he had to explain these massive sightings there in Michigan.
Right.
And so he was up against the wall, and he said it is possible that some of these sightings might just be swamp gas.
I mean, right.
He really hedged his bet there. And then, of course, the press zipped out of the room and said, Hynek says UFO is swamp gas.
Right. Well, he's over that one now.
Well, he's got a good sense of humor about that, too, by the way.
I know it. But I remember when it happened. Because I was on Project Blue Book on the back end of it. Mm-hmm. He was coming on the front end of whatever they called his project, you know. So I was like, phasing out, and he was phasing in. It was a real interesting thing. But the stuff that we've been talking about with the systems, where I started to explain the alignment yesterday, you know, remember how we drew the circle and did all that?
Yes.
That information came to me through extraterrestrial sources, and because I could have never thought this up. I'm not that creative. But having, you know, created this type of equipment and having spread it all over the face of this planet, because it's literally in every country right now, and then having seen the results of it, it's just totally awesome, and I just want to share that with you, you know. But we were talking yesterday about the Systems 3 and setting it up, you know. Remember how I described making a 10-foot circle?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. And in the 10-foot circle, we had drawn a north and south line with a compass, and we marked the point where the line intersected the circle at the north was T1. And then on that same line between north and south, we had drawn a 52-degree angle, called that T2. And we had drawn one off of that, called it T3. And what we had discussed yesterday was the fact pyramid, if you took the angle of the side of the pyramid and divided by 7, you would have, you know, the actual 7 divisions in a circle. So you'd have 7, you know, concentric or even divisions in the circle. And what happens is, when you, you know, I explained yesterday about how we put up the irradiators, those tall columns, and the unit that went in the bottom, and they were filled with crystals. And what happens is, when you set or put a structure like that up in your living room or wherever, it immediately becomes attuned to the rotation of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And as, because it's aligned, see, all you have to do to get into this cosmic energy, or whatever you want to call it, you know, if you can call it terrestrial energy, all you have to do is set up a structure that is resonant to the frequencies of gravity and set the structure up in alignment with the motion of the Earth and the Moon and the Sun and all the other things that happen. So that's precisely what we do when we set one of our systems up.
Dr. Bell, excuse me for interrupting, but I have been handed a note that I think I should announce, and that is that your seminar will be November 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Unity by the Sea Church, I guess that is, at 1245 4th Street in Santa Monica. Now, did you even know that?
Yeah, I had it here, as a matter of fact. I'm glad you remind me, and little Debbie's on her way in. She's probably listening to us right now. She's not there already.
She is already here. I see her
smiling
visage through the glass. So that is the seminar, November 15th, 7:30 p.m. at Unity by the Sea, 1245 4th Street in Santa Monica. And do people make reservations for that?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, when Debbie Kenna comes on the air, she's going to explain it all, and I'm going to listen.
Okay. you just show up and do your thing, right?
Yeah. I'm the peripheral scientist out here in the fringes waiting for Miss Goddess to tell me when and where I'm supposed to appear.
Okay.
And I guarantee I'll be there. But it says a corner
on
of
time, right?
Six.
You'll be there on time too, right?
Yeah, I guarantee I won't be late like the last.
The last one, I was sweating it out.
But I got there.
Yes, you did, and you had a quiet.
Not only that, when I got there, we kept it going, and you guys all fell asleep in the back, and then we just kept on going, you know.
Now, wait a minute. We had a good time there. You know, we've got a phone call for you. Let's go to the phone lines right now.
Okay.
On line six, we've got Greg. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing, Greg?
Good. I'm doing good, Fred.
Oh, good.
I know you get a lot of compliments about your systems and things, and I just wanted to tell you that, you know, I've been wearing this one pyramid on my head now for a couple months.
2 months? Which one?
You know, I don't even know.
Well, is it real lightweight or is it heavy?
It's light.
Oh, it's a titanium one, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, I bought one from you at the last seminar, and
okay.
I loaned it to a friend of mine who's an acupuncturist.
Right.
And he charges pendulum with it.
Right.
So he wouldn't give it back to me, so I'm borrowing one from Olivia, if you remember her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say that I've gone through more growth, you know, with this thing. I feel so much more connected to the higher energies. And so much more.
Will. You know, like I was saying at the very first part of our show, I used to have to take drugs, you know, like psilocybin and LSD back in the late 60s, early 70s to get high. And then suddenly I discovered somewhere along the way when Ralph Metzner came back from India and Timothy O'Leary got really, you know, balanced out, that you don't have to get high, you just be high. And one of the things about wearing the pyramid is it naturally brings your body up to a higher level of vibration. It's like the system we've been talking about.
Right.
Yeah, the system is like 10,000 times what wearing that pyramid is. But I wore, you know, few people told me, one of the perpetuators of this knowledge was the guy up north does a spirulina, you know, Christopher Hill. And he has some comment, you know, he's a great spirulina man and a great pendulum man. He doesn't know anything about pyramids because he came out with this stuff about negative green, right? Which was nothing more than a positive ion created by a plastic or aluminum framed pyramid. So to disprove what people were saying about pyramids, I wore every single day of my life for 8 years a pyramid on my head. I was never seen in the home, out of the home, or in public without my pyramid. I did it for 8 years to prove the point. I have a 5-year-old daughter that was born in one. The bottom line of pyramid is it raises consciousness. Very quickly.
Last week, I've been doubling up on my vitamins lately, and I've been wearing this thing. Last week, I left here Friday with so much energy, I felt like I was going into outer space.
Yeah, you got to be careful, because what will happen is you'll get so high and so confident within your own nature that you won't relate to people properly, so don't get too far out there. It's not
okay.
Hard to do, believe me. I know, I've been
So how do you control all this energy when you're amplifying it 10 times, like,
well,
with these systems in the house?
If your lifestyle will allow it to perpetuate, you will automatically attract to you people of the same energy field. If your lifestyle will not allow that, you'll become isolated. So isolation will bring you back by itself. It speaks, you know, it's a nature and a voice within itself. But, you know, you might meet some really neat people.
Yeah, well, you know, I used to design antennas for aircraft.
Did you?
Yeah. And what was really fascinating for me was that when I read about your pyramids, that they're actually antennas.
Oh, yeah. NASA came out with a what's called a tech brief back about 1969, showing how that you could take a pyramid structure in a grid system, connect it to a diode and a capacitor, and get electricity from it.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I used to sit there
with... A lot of work with pyramids. They're using pyramids now. They used it for ESP experiments on the first moonwalk, too, but this is the kind of stuff the public never really got into. You know, they never really talked about it.
Right. So, I guess the frequency generator, then, you said, is the vibration of gravity?
Well, no, what it allows you, the pyramids are all the way across the spectrum of color. And
right.
The pyramid feeds the hydrogen atom within the body. So, what it does is allow you, your conscious mind, to become aware of, you know, similar harmonious vibrations, and one of them could be, you know, gravity. So what it does is it raises awareness so that you can become more scientific or whatever.
Can you physically, like, measure gain patterns off these things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No problem at all. It's done with biofeedback equipment. One of the best pieces of equipment that I've ever done was an EMG, electromyograph, which measures the amount of electricity coming from the brain to a particular muscle in the body. And when you put a pyramid on, the EMG readings go up. This is considered orthodox medical equipment.
And Greg and Dr. Bell, we're going to have to move along. Greg, by the way, I got your letter the other day.
Great.
Thank you very much. It was very complimentary.
Ah, you're welcome. Well, I like to compliment all of you because you do such a good job, and I've really changed my life, really seriously, since this show.
Well, we ran out of time on that one, so we got to stop. Actually, we went a little bit of overtime on that one. But we will stop now. And that was a lot of fun. And there we go.